What's up, Legend? Welcome to the Sooner Nation podcast. Dude, I'm just so excited that I'm not by myself this week. Matt Hofeld along with Rich DeCray after trying to power through. We've talked about this, Rich. It's hard to talk to yourself. You know what I'm saying? It's hard.
No kidding.
It's very difficult. I'm not going to start out by saying how are things in Oklahoma, because I know it's wet in Oklahoma. I'm suffering on the beach, the beaches of Panama. Here's an interesting fact. I know we're going to jump into Oklahoma stuff, but interesting fact. It is the rainy season here in Panama, but
hey,
last
guess what?
Week, what's up?
It's also the rainy season in Oklahoma.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The state of Oklahoma received more rainfall than the country of Panama.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. That does not surprise me.
Well, big news coming out of Oklahoma. Softball Mariah Lopez has entered into the transfer portal. That's not a guarantee that she's leaving, but based on Patty Gasso's comments, it looks like she's got a foot out the door. We're going to talk about that. The reasons, I've got some thoughts. I'm sure you have some thoughts, as well as where she might land to continue her collegiate career. Oklahoma, it's time to start looking at opponent previews. The Sooners don't have a gimme to start the season like they did last year in Florida Atlantic. And we're going to get back, since Richard and I are back together on this podcast, we're going to get back to our rankings, and we're finishing up the offensive side of the ball with our offensive linemen. We've done quarterbacks, we've done running backs, we've done receiver tight end combos. And now tonight you're going to hear offensive line from worst to first. So, Rich, let's jump in on Mariah Lopez. I don't know how much I want to take us before we hit our first break, but let's jump in here. You were there. I had to leave. I didn't get to see the championship series of the Women's College World Series, but that first game against UCLA was just brutal. But we had talked way before the World Series that Oklahoma had settled on Gisele Juarez, and they were going to go as far as Gisele Juarez took them. Thoughts on Mariah Lopez, her decision to enter the portal, whether you think she's gone or Oklahoma has a chance, and we'll just start there.
I honestly have to believe that Mariah Lopez is gone. Everything that I've seen, even from Coach Patty Gasso, lends a hand towards her looking elsewhere. You know, she's in an unfortunate position that she really waited her time at Oklahoma behind Paige Parker and Paige Lowry, who anchored this effort out of the bullpen consistently and consistently delivered in that effort. She finally gets her chance. She really shines at the beginning of the year, but she has two transfers who come in, Shannon Sale, as well as G. Juarez, who immediately compete for playing time, which means there's a little bit less, especially when an All-American and Juarez comes to Oklahoma. You know that there's going to be a little bit less playing time. But I do applaud Mariah Lopez for sticking it out, knowing that she has the talent to compete with the best of them, knowing that she was going to get her chance to prove herself. But as the year wore on, it very, very quickly became evident that G. Juarez was the ace of this team, and that change of pace became Shannon Sale, regardless of what Mariah Lopez has been capable of and has proven capable of in the circle when she's given that opportunity. So I do have to believe she's gone at this point in time. This is a loaded bullpen. You've got a freshman who a lot of people are talking about. I'm blanking on the name at this point in time. I say a lot of people, meaning those who are within the program and have worked with the freshman who redshirted this season. They like the progress that she's making. So in a stacked situation with 1 year of eligibility left, it's kind of a perfect storm in my opinion. And like I said, Matt, I just don't see a way that she does stay.
Well, I'm 100% with you. I don't see how she's staying. And this comes down to Brooke Vestal is the freshman you're thinking about, but this comes down to the World Series itself. She more than proved her value. I think she was 19-1 throughout the season. You saw Oklahoma in the regional. You saw really all three pitchers used when you talk about Lopez and then Shannon Sale and G. Juarez. And then as they go on into that Wisconsin, who did they play in the Super? That was Wisconsin.
Wisconsin,
right?
Was regionals.
Okay, who was the Super regional? I went to that.
Yes, well, you did.
Whatever.
Had you not asked me that, Matt, I would have.
So I just remember them losing to Wisconsin, and then they swept the Super Regional.
Northwestern.
Yeah, they swept the Super Regional against Northwestern. But when it got to Oklahoma City, it was the Gisele Juarez show. And the truth is, Rich, if you go back to February, when we're talking about this pitching staff, and in February, Mariah Lopez is the person we're talking about, how well she did, how much better she was than we expected out of her. And she anchored this team to start the season. But as Juarez and Sale kind of got their legs underneath them a little bit, you begin to see that shift that we've talked about throughout the season on our podcast, where really it was, you know, February, early March, it was kind of a guessing game as to who was going to be that top arm. But as March gave into April into May, you knew it was Gisele Juarez and then the other girls. And the fact that they threw Gisele so much in the World Series, particularly in that championship series, I don't blame Mariah Lopez. I don't blame her for looking anywhere else, because if you look at the programs across the country, 90% of them, Mariah Lopez could be their ace. And it's the Austin Kendall syndrome. It's you wait your time. Now it comes, oh, wait, here's another transfer. And I think she did a great job at being compatible with this pitching staff to have these two transfers come in. But I think that message was sent across the board that this is Gisele Juarez's team, particularly in that championship series where, you know, you go with Juarez twice against Alabama to get you into the championship series. And really, I mean, the only reason they will use any other pitcher in that championship series is because that first game got so out of control. I guess what I'm saying is I wish Mariah Lopez the best. I'm not surprised she's leaving. And the truth is, Rich, I don't blame her for leaving.
Right.
And that's not bad. No, I'm not saying that in a bad way. I mean, if you want to compete and you want to be the ace, well, the Oklahoma has an ace next year, and it's going to be Gisele Juarez. And there's nothing you can do about that.
Matt, this is a really good opportunity, in my opinion, for someone like Lopez to begin shopping herself around, because you look at all the talented pitchers from across the nation who gathered just in Oklahoma City alone, and you begin to look at where were the seniors and how often did those seniors carry the team. Now that those seniors are gone, because they were so heavily relied upon, there is that opening for someone who does have the experience, someone who's competed at the highest of levels on the Division I circuit at a university like Oklahoma against programs, UCLA, Florida, Alabama, North. You look at all of these really talented teams, and you know, Matt, you've said it, I agree with it, Mariah Lopez can hold her own with or against any of these programs. But again, I'm looking at the absences. Who is removing themselves from the equation, and which coach is looking to bring someone in? Because let's be honest, who doesn't want someone with the experience and with the talent that Lopez has to come in for a year and potentially repeat, not only as a conference champion, but as a super regional winner and earning that bid into the Women's College World Series?
You're listening to Sooner Nation, the online podcast for Heartland Sports. Heartland-sports.com is where you can find our coverage, not just Oklahoma softball, it's come to a conclusion, but also football previews as we get ready, building up until September 1st. He's Rich. I'm Matt. We'll be right back. Okay, we got to get into some football talk. We're going to preview, talk a little bit about the Houston Cougars. But I want to ask you this. I want to kind of close out this conversation on Mariah Lopez. The three hot rumors I've heard are Florida, Arizona State, and Oregon. And I got, at this point, I've got to go with the Oregon connection with Lombardi being there, who was really critical in Mariah Lopez being recruited to Oklahoma, coached Mariah Lopez for her first 2 years in college. If you're doing odds on favorite, to me, I don't see Arizona happening at all. I say there's less than a 50% chance it's Florida.
For Arizona?
Arizona State.
Oh.
Now, you. I'm going to let you talk about Arizona, but I've heard Arizona State, which would be kind of interesting because of the Gisele Juarez situation. It's almost like you traded pitchers. But like I said, I don't see Arizona happening. I'd say less than a 50% chance for Florida. To me, my money is on her going and joining Melissa Lombardi at Oregon and trying to help her revitalize that program for her senior year of college softball. What are your thoughts?
And it may happen. I'm not ruling Oregon out because of that connection. You also have to think about where Lopez is from, and that's Southern California. So being back in the Pac-12, I think immediately when you begin to think of potential landing spots, the Pac-12 has a hand up over anyone on the East Coast. And I know that you've mentioned Florida or singled them out specifically. I just don't see them in the running. I think that would be a great place for her, one, because of the pedigree, because of the level that they consistently play at, knowing that Florida wants to really adopt an Oklahoma model and begin to say, okay, I'm thinking of Alabama more than Florida, but knowing some of these teams are going to start scheduling bigger names in the non-conference portion of the schedule. Florida's consistently done that. Oklahoma's consistently done that. Knowing that you've got that proven pitcher, I think there may be interest from Florida. There's an Oklahoma connection there as well, not quite as strong as the Melissa Lombardi connection to Lopez. But Arizona, I think, could be a really good opportunity for her. You're talking about a team who returned to the Women's College World Series, really, really heavily relied on Taylor McQuillan as the pitcher. She's a senior. She's moving on. She's graduating. There's that opening. But behind McQuillan, they're losing their number three pitcher as well. So the natural progression here, Matt, is you would expect that number two pitcher to slide into that starting role. But I'm looking at Lopez and saying there's a little bit less to contend with, knowing that you're going to be number one or number two instead of number three at a place like Oklahoma. Like I said, it's a really good opportunity for her to showcase her skill set and to prove, you know, I don't want to say to prove to Oklahoma, but that's really what I think is going to happen, because these two teams most likely will meet again along the road somewhere in the postseason.
Well, and I don't know that I'm going to jump on with that she's got to prove something to Oklahoma or she wants to.
No, I don't think she does, but that's the narrative everyone's going
to
say.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it'd be fun wherever she lands to see. And again, Arizona State would be fun to put her against Gisele Juarez for that matter. But I look at it, she's got a national championship. She's been to the Women's College World Series 3 years in a row. What does she have to solidify her legacy? She's got 1 year of college softball left. She's not going to lead Oklahoma to a national championship. If that happens next year, it's going to be Gisele Juarez. So what can she do? I feel like she can go to Oregon and help Lombardi resurrect that program there.
Right, but Matt, I mean,
I'm saying legacy. I mean, she's been to the postseason. She's done that. What is she going to be remembered by for her collegiate career? Well, she can lead a program like Oregon back into the postseason, back into the super regionals, back into Oklahoma City. That's bigger than anything she would do at the University of Oklahoma this coming season. That's why, and she's got that connection. That's why I'm saying Oregon.
Oregon's the furthest program away from any of the ones that we've mentioned. not only from competing for a national championship, but from competing for a conference title as well.
But she would be a first step.
I get what you're saying, but a first step for a year. It would be different if she had 2 years or 3 years left of eligibility, but with one, it's really hard for me to buy into your argument. And to let me say it this way, you're not going to win me over.
Right.
I'm not on that boat with you.
That's fine. Well, I mean, time will tell. I mean, it's the summer. She's probably going to make a decision. I would bet sometime next month, so she can start getting on campus in August. Time will tell. I don't get back to Oklahoma until September. So by the time I get back to Soonerland, we'll probably know how this story ends. He's Rich. I'm Matt. Quick break. We'll be right back. Start talking about Oklahoma football. Okay, well, the Sooners, look, Rich, here it is. I don't know how much you've had a chance to start looking into Oklahoma's opponents, but starting out, this is a big game. I mean, the Oklahoma-Houston, forget the fact that it's Sunday instead of Saturday, forget the fact that ABC is picking up, forget the fact that it's primetime. Dana Holgorsen probably has the best offense he's ever brought to Norman to just put Alex Grinch to the test immediately. Now, the flip side of that is Dana Holgorsen has never been a defensive coach. So Oklahoma's got that going for him with Jalen Hurts. But, man, I'm expecting this game to really kind of have some fireworks to start the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you specifically went to the offensive side of the ball.
Well, I agree. How bad Oklahoma was defensively, how bad Houston was defensively. I don't know. I mean, obviously the under over, if it's out right now, it's going to change a lot before September 1st. But just based off of last year and who's coming back, I don't even know what the number is going to be, but I would bet the over.
Yeah. Matt, here's the one thing that scares me the most about a team like Houston. Traditionally speaking, now I know we haven't seen the Alex Grinch defense at this point in time. We've heard rumors or rumblings of a speed defense, slim and trim, quick on the field. But Oklahoma historically has not fared well against mobile quarterbacks. It's always given Oklahoma issues. I'm looking at a guy like Derek King, who really is the spark plug for this offense. You want to talk about a guy who's not only explosive, but is also efficient, can throw, can run the ball. I believe he had 36 touchdowns to 6 interceptions last year. This is a guy who is ridiculously gifted and is extremely athletic and will make you pay for any mistake that you make. And we're not saying that the Oklahoma defense is capable of shutting people down. Why? Because we haven't seen that at this point in time. But like I said, I'm extremely intrigued by Derek King and the talent that he possesses in a single entity and what he's going to be able to do once he steps onto the field with the experience that he's currently got under his wings.
Yeah, tore meniscus in his right knee, missed the final 2.5 games of 2018. But at that point, the final 2.5 games, he was practically a 3,000-yard passer. I think he was less than 20 yards shy of 3,000. He also had run for 674 yards and was responsible between rushing and passing 50 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here's what's crazy, Matt. I'm going to interrupt you really quickly.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you take away the sacks that he suffered, do you know where he'd be at in rushing yards?
Well, no, but I'm glad you mentioned sacks. We'll come back to that. Go ahead.
Well, if you take away all the sacks, Derek King would have racked up 1,000 yards on the ground. I mean, these are Murray type numbers.
Right. Well, and there's if you look at this kid and you start looking at NFL draft prospects and so forth, the person he's compared to the most is Kyler Murray. You know, and it's not
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and it's not just that he is who he was last season. He's completely healthy, went through the spring. But he's got his top three receivers back in 2019 as well. And so Marquez Stevenson, 75 catches for 1,019 yards last year, 19 touchdowns, is their top receiver. This is an offense. I mean, a lot of people are like, well, why would Danner Holgorsen leave West Virginia, leave Power Five to go to Houston? Well, I'm going to give you two reasons. The first reason is 5 years, $20 million. That's a big reason to leave West Virginia. But the second reason is he's his first year. This is a guy who is offensive minded. I mean, that is, there's no second guessing this. He's you know, we make light of Cliff Kingsbury and his negligence on the defensive side of the ball. Well, Dana Holgorsen is cut from the same mold, and he's going to take over an offense that was top 10 nationally in scoring at 43.9 points per game, top 10 nationally in total offense at 512 yards per game. And they've got everybody back except for the chink in the armor is going to be what they can do on the offensive line. That's where Oklahoma, when you look at Alex Grinch and you talked about, you know, speed defense, Oklahoma is going to have to get penetration and containment. That's how you play this kid. That's something that we saw. And I guess that's why I'm excited that this is the first game, because we saw the struggle that the Mike Stoops defense had against quarterbacks like this. You already brought that up. The key to quarterbacks like this is containment and pressure. Your defensive ends have to contain the outside, but you've got to find a way to get pressure up the middle. And so for a guy like Neville Gallimore and what they're going to do with these linebackers, that's where you start. You've got to get those gaps. You got to shoot them, flush him. But when you flush him, you've got to have containment that he doesn't get too far outside. Oklahoma's defense was terrible last year, but I think that they would have done better in the American Athletic Conference, which is where Houston plays. And this kid racked up all those yards in that route. I still, there's not, if you're looking for Oklahoma to win this game comfortably, there's a chance that that's going to happen. But if you were to ask me right now on June 11th, when we're recording this, if there's a better chance that Oklahoma wins this game comfortably or a better chance that Houston kind of puts the fear of God in fans a little bit, I'm going with the second option, because you know it's the very first game for Alex Grinch and his defense. There's going to be mistakes, and they've got to really – to play an offense of this caliber, you got to be as close to mistake-free as possible, because it's not – again, it's not just the quarterback. It's the quarterback and the receivers. Oh, and by the way, they also have Kyle Porter, formerly of Texas, to boost their running – to boost their running back – spot. They already had a kid in there, Patrick Carr, who led the team with a non-quarterback. No, actually, I think he did lead the team altogether, 868 rushing yards. This is going to be, this is going to be an all-around package deal. Oklahoma had better win the offensive, the battle at the line of scrimmage. Because seriously, if they can't win the line of scrimmage, this game is going to get really, really cantankerous for Oklahoma. And you're going to have a lot of fans, and you know the Oklahoma fan base. You know how Oklahoma fans are. We're a part of that group. If they cannot win the battle at the line of scrimmage, you're going to have people calling for Alex Grinch's head right after game one.
Well, let me tell you this, because I believe Oklahoma and Houston find themselves in very, very similar predicaments. High-flying offenses that continuously retool instead of rebuild, and then defenses that have a lot of question marks. Houston has a new defensive coordinator themselves. They're going to have to address some depth issues along that front seven. But the biggest concern, Matt, that I see with this Houston defense really is their corners. You want to talk about Oklahoma having these big athletic receivers, regardless of experience, there's talent there. You bring in this freshman class that is extremely lengthy and is right now projected to make waves within the conference, and you're going to test these cornerbacks that Houston has. And this is my opinion, I think we are going to very quickly find out how good of a passer Jalen Hurts is, because he's going to have to hit guys left and right who are just wide open, potentially running up the field. Can he make those throws? Fingers crossed. I know that's been the one big knock against Jalen Hurts, but Oklahoma's going to test those cornerbacks, and they're going to test them early and often, if you're asking me.
Well, and I don't want to disagree with you on everything, but I I agree that they're going to test those corners often or early, one of the two. But I also think what you're going to see happen is that Oklahoma is really going to try to win this game on the ground. It's as old as the game itself. The best way to beat a high-scoring, high-flying offense is to keep them off the field. And I think Oklahoma is going to use a stable of running backs. Pledger's going to have, in my opinion, he's going to have a breakout season in 2019. We already know what Trey Sermon and Kennedy Brooks are all about. I think Oklahoma, yes, they're going to use Jalen Hurts. Yes, they're going to look for those big play opportunities. But I think really they're going to come out and try to run the ball. They're going to try to settle this game by keeping Houston off the field. And here's the thing. Oklahoma, for as bad as they were last year defensively, Houston may have been worse. They set school records for points allowed, school records for total yards in the season. Oh, and by the way, they gave up 42 rushing touchdowns last year. So I feel like running the ball is a good place to start. You know, Ed Oliver's gone off of this team. Their top two tacklers are gone off this team. We're recording this on June 11th, but if I'm Lincoln Riley, I'm talking to my running backs and I'm really saying, guys, focus on this game September 1st because someone's going to go over 200 yards.
It's very possible. I had mentioned the depth concerns that Houston has up front. It's really just a contrast of where is that weakest point. And if Houston is looking at trying to use a little bit of smoke and mirrors, to use a term that we've thrown out in the past, and really pretend like they are going to crowd the box, they're going to stop the run, they're going to focus in on Jalen Hurts, knowing that he has the ability to tuck and run when called upon, or if nothing is available to him, that's, like I said, it's really just a difference of opinion. That's why I'm singling out the cornerbacks. That's why I think we see a little bit more passing than than running. But we'll have our answer on September 1st. If you had to give it a percentage at this time, your run is going to be 60-40?
Oh, I would say between 55-45, 60-40, yeah. Okay, I think it'll be run heavy.
I'm the opposite. In fact,
I'm gonna just go ahead and say 60% run, because here's what's going to happen. I think they run early. I think they get a lead. And I think they run late to kind of not to cruise, but again, to get that clock. You want this. I mean, I can't say it enough. This is a dangerous offense and you want them off the field as much as possible. Run the ball, run the clock. I think 60-40 at a minimum.
Okay. You're Matt. I'm Rich. We're going to disagree.
Okay. So Houston, South Dakota, and then at UCLA, the three non-conference games that Oklahoma starts the season off with, I rank Houston as the most difficult of those three. Obviously, South Dakota is just there. But Houston, you at UCLA, which one would you weigh heavier than the other?
And I may have to go with UCLA. They are a Power 5 program. I've been looking at just win probabilities, okay? And I'm basing my answer solely off of those numbers. Currently, what I'm looking at is Houston having a 6% win probability in Norman facing a team like Oklahoma. And what I'm seeing is a projection or a spread. And I know we are way out in front of this. The projection's nearing 30 at this point in time, Matt. Take it or leave it. I'm buying into it at this point in time. I think the offense can do damage, but I think Oklahoma in their own right on the offensive side can keep up stride for stride and really put the pressure on this Houston defense to consistently perform. And I just don't think that they will. It's first year head coach, new systems are being installed on both sides, Oklahoma as well as Houston. I've got to go with UCLA because it's going to be the first time Oklahoma's playing on the road in a big-time environment. That one's at the Coliseum. Correct me if I'm wrong there, but you talk about the history and kind of the walk-up to that game. I think there's a potential not Pitt game. I don't think Oklahoma – Pitfall, excuse me. I don't think Oklahoma will lose that game, but I think it'll be a little bit closer. UCLA going to bring that physical brand of football that a lot of these teams that Oklahoma will face in the non-conference portion of the schedule just don't have the capability of bringing.
Yeah, see, man, I disagree so hard with you on this. I mean, I just do, because UCLA was so bad. And that that stadium is going to be full. It's going to be half full of Oklahoma fans, because they're not going to sell out. They were 3-9 last season. They lost. I look at this game, these two games, and what I see is the thing that stands out between these three teams, Oklahoma, Houston, UCLA, is outstanding offense between Oklahoma and Houston. Terrible defense between Oklahoma and Houston, which to me, that means that's going to be a shootout fun game. I don't care what the numbers say way out in June. But then I look at UCLA and I see a terrible, as bad as Oklahoma and Houston are on defense, UCLA is that bad on offense. And I just, again, they're not going to sell out. The only reason that stadium is going to be full is because it's the Oklahoma Sooners playing. They're going to lose to start the season at Cincinnati. They're going to struggle. I think they're going to beat San Diego State. And then Oklahoma comes in the third week of the season. I mean, there's already going to be issues, and people are going to be fussing and griping about Chip Kelly at that point. I see what you're saying. I just disagree strongly, because I think if you put Houston and UCLA on the field together, I think Houston wins, and I think it's by at least two touchdowns.
Okay.
So, I mean, we're talking the second game of the season, and it's June 11th. You can find us on Twitter. We're on Twitter at Sports Heartland. We're also on iTunes with the Sooner Nation podcast. We're on TuneIn. We're on, you know, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts, you can pretty much find us. We'd love to hear your feedback. What do you think about Houston, UCLA? What's your fear when you talk about non-conference? Leave us a comment at heartland-sports.com. Send us a tweet at Sports Heartland, or drop us an email, heartland_sports@yahoo.com. We're going to rank the Big 12 offensive line from worst to first right after this. All right, man. As the welcome back to the Sooner Nation podcast. He's Rich. I'm Matt. At this point, Rich, you got to say it's just inching, you know, as the season inches closer, we've been breaking down offensive position groups in the Big 12. And then next week, we'll actually start getting to defensive position groups. Final position group we have is offensive line. And I know you've got kind of the top six, and I went ahead and ranked all of the groups from 10 to 1. And so I'm going to give you 10 through 7, and then I'm going to let you start at number 6, and then we'll jump in there and begin to argue a little bit. But I like to play games and be a little bit stupid. So I'm going to let you guess who my number 10 is. I'm going to let you guess so on down till we get to number 7. And you are correct. Okay. Kansas is number 10. And the reason why is Kansas. I mean, there's not a lot of good. The best part of this offensive side of the ball for the Jayhawks is the running back, Puka Williams. And again, it's still up in the air what his story is going to be like by the time the fall rolls around. So I've got Kansas just because they're going to be among the worst position groups across the board pretty much as we do this. So Kansas number 10, there's no depth, there's no talent. And that sounds harsh, but that's the reality of Kansas football right now. Number 9, who do you think I got?
Kansas State.
Dude, it's like you're looking at my list.
No, if I had to do a top 10, man, and yeah, I didn't go out that far on it. My apologies. I had a top 5 ready to go just because of scheduling today. I didn't get as far into a lot of work that I wanted to get done today. But needless to say, if I had to rank them just off the top of my head, it would have been Kansas State, and I'll give you 8 here in a second, and I'll be right again.
Okay, so Kansas State, and I'm just going to say ditto for Kansas State. You got a new coach, you got changing some things around. They're better than Kansas, but they're not going to be much better than anybody else in the conference, in my opinion. All right, so who you think I got number eight?
West Virginia.
Boom, you are wrong, my friend. Number eight, I've got the Baylor Bears. They are returning three starters, but this was the weak link on this offense last season, and they've got to shift some things around amongst those three starters. The way I understand it right now, the three guys that are returning will not be starting back at the same position that they played for the majority of 2018. This is a unit that struggled at times. Think back to Caleb Kelly pretty much breaking Charlie Brewer in half that game in Norman. Sometimes having returning starters is good, but sometimes having returning starters is bad. And that's the situation I think Baylor finds himself in. Number seven.
Yeah, well, you've got West Virginia instead of Baylor.
Yeah, they pretty much the same thing. West Virginia's got two returning starters. And again, both of them are moving some positioning around, but I think there's more talent there based off of what we saw from these two units last season. So it's very close, and I even think you would have put them the other way around. But you would have had West Virginia 8, Baylor 7, and I really can't argue that. I think you could make a legitimate point for either side. So here we go. We get to number 6. Tell me who your number 6 is.
At number 6, this may surprise you, but I do have Texas Tech at this point in time. As much as they drop back and pass the ball, and most likely we're saying that they're going to continue to do that regardless of the head coaching change there, I've always been impressed at the number of sacks that they surrender. They were ranked top 3 in the conference last year. I think they continue that trend, which bumps them up for me to that number 6. Not that they're going to be the most talented offensive line in the conference or on the field at any given point in time. But again, efficiency does it's something to go off of.
Well, I'm staying in the state of Texas for my number 6, but the team I'm going with is in Austin with the Texas Longhorns. I'm a fan of Zach Shackelford. I'm a fan of his game more than I'm a fan of him. I think next to Creed Humphrey, he's probably the second best center in the Big 12 this season. He and Creed will compete for that first team all conference honor, and really that's going to be based on what the team does in by and large with the whole body of work. But I think those two are going to go head to head for number 1 and number 2 as far as first team, second team, all Big 12 at the center position. Two returning starters, though. I mean, Shackelford's there. He's going to anchor that line. He's only got one other guy returning in the trenches with him. So they find themselves very similar to where Oklahoma was last year. It's just what Texas doesn't have is Bill Beedenbow. And so I've got the Texas Longhorns number 6 on my list, and number 5, I already kind of led into that. I've got Oklahoma, and RJ Proctor to this point has saved this group from being bottom 5 in the Big 12 on my list. Is Oklahoma going to finish 5 or lower? No, I don't think so. I think if we're having this conversation 6 months from now, after the season concludes, we're going to find that Oklahoma, maybe not the best offensive line in the Big 12 this year, but I think they have a chance to be. They're going to be top 1 or 2, maybe 3, just depending on how much tweaking Bill Beedenbow has to do in this season to find that continuity. Man. They're going to go junior college. You've got some guys that have been developing. But based off of what we know, Rich, we know RJ Proctor is going to be a starter. We really know Creed Humphrey is going to be a starter. We don't know a lot else at this point about Oklahoma, so it's hard to rank a team based on potential when you don't even know the names of the other three guys that are starting on this unit. I got to put Oklahoma number 5.
A little bit saddened by that, because Matt, our predictions, our projections, our rankings, whatever you would like to call them, are going to be so vastly different at this point in time. I see what you're saying about,
right?
Yep. I see what you're saying about Oklahoma. I went ahead and I threw TCU down at number 5. Again, I'm borrowing a lot of what I said about Texas Tech, because TCU is consistently good along the offensive line and limiting the number of sacks. Now, there's a little bit more responsibility on them than just limiting the number of sacks, and I think that's where TCU can improve upon, especially along this offensive line. TCU, in my opinion, has generally recruited guys who may be a little bit undersized compared to some of the other teams that are in the conference. Again, we look at these speed, this explosive, this quick tendency, recruiting tendency when you're looking for position players, when you're looking for players at every position for TCU specifically. That's the thought, that's the trend that I've kind of noticed and I'm throwing down on paper. But when it comes to TCU, I know they're going to be explosive. I know they're going to be quick. They're not going to be the biggest. They may not be the strongest, but they're darn, darn efficient. And I've got them at number 5, which brings me up to number 4. And I am actually going to put Oklahoma at number 4. A lot of the reasons that you have mentioned, it's really difficult when you look at the two deep to say who is actually going to slide in to these roles. I know there have been a lot of high hopes for some of these recruits, specifically 5 stars like Bray Walker, stepping onto campus, having that redshirt year to learn the system, to learn from the guys who are, and then begin to implement some of the techniques and some of the things that he has learned. I don't know that he's going to be a starter because no one knows who's going to be those starters. So when you look at that, the depth chart and what Oklahoma is replacing, it is a little bit concerning knowing that you do have a quality quarterback. You do have quality running backs. I believe in Bill Beanbow. I believe in his system. I believe in the tactics he uses to motivate these guys. But the product on the field has yet to be seen. So, yeah, I'm there with you. I just have them at number 4.
Well, I mean, we're only one spot off, so you were acting like super shocked. I thought maybe you're going to have them like top 2 or 3, but number four, I've actually got Oklahoma State, and this isn't going to make a lot of Oklahoma fans happy that I've got the Cowboys ranked ahead of the Sooners in this position group. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you're looking at 3 returning starters from Oklahoma State. It's a group that struggled in the past, but some of that can be put on the quarterback for holding the ball too long. Some of that can be put on, you know, injuries and sliding guys over. But one of the more experienced returning position groups as far as this offensive line goes is in Stillwater. They've got some work to do with those other 2 spots to fill. But these guys are a year older, a year more experienced. They're breaking in a new quarterback, so they're going to be tested early as the season starts. But I think when you look at the guys that you know that are coming back, Oklahoma State's got one of the better groups. They're deeper than a lot of the other teams as well. So I've got Oklahoma State number 4. Number 3, I've got your group out of Lubbock. I've got Texas Tech. Again, 4 returning starters, both tackles, both guards. They're only replacing the center position. And for all the reasons you said, this is an offense that traditionally gets rid of the ball very quickly. They do stretch plays. And this offensive line, I think, has been underrated in years past. You brought up the stat about the sacks that probably not a lot of people realize that. Some of that is because of the way that Cliff Kingsbury's system got the ball out of the quarterback's hands so quickly. But again, some of that is because of how good this offensive line is. And you look at the rushing stats and their yards per carry average, it's significantly higher than probably what you would guess it to be because of this group can get a push. Returning 4 starters in 2019 is really going to help this new coach and the new offense, which I think is going to look a lot like the last several years we've seen from Texas Tech. But he's got a good base, a foundation with this offensive line. I've got them at number 3.
Yeah, I've got Texas at number 3.
That's just not right, man. Just not right.
You've mentioned the names, and here's the reality for me is I believe, as much as we like to dog on Texas, I believe their offensive line gets a bad rap because of the mental mistakes that are made from the quarterback position. Texas has not had quality quarterbacking, and what's going on in Texas currently with Sam Ehlinger, I don't know that I would call that quality quarterbacking. Still, now there's potential tenacity. The grit that Ehlinger has is there. He can lead this team. He's just not, when I think of a traditional quarterback, he doesn't really fit that mold for me. Needless to say, I believe, like I said, this Texas offensive line gets a bad rap because of those mental mistakes like we saw in the Big 12 championship game with the sack in the end zone as Ellinger stared it down and still never saw it coming. Needless to say, they are going to be a big physical group looking to prove themselves. I've got them at number three, Matt.
All right. Who you got number two? Go ahead.
Number two for me, I do have Oklahoma State. On the two deep, they've got 8 returning experienced players. I get that they're going to have to replace 2 within that number of 10. The biggest knock for Oklahoma State has been the inconsistencies. Now, I believe that as a group, they flashed signs of greatness, but they didn't do it consistently. They're going to have to take a big step forward if they want to continue to be successful and compete and push some of these top tier teams that everyone is saying will compete, not only for a spot in a championship game, but also potentially a spot in the national playoff picture. If Oklahoma State wants to elevate themselves, it all comes down to consistency for me. They have the tools, they have the bodies. Will they be able to put it together for an entire 4 quarters?
Well, I've got my number two is going to be TCU for all the same reasons I had Texas Tech at number three. You got 4 returning starters. You already mentioned about the quality of what they do with the offensive line. They are a more physical team than Texas Tech is. Amongst their 4 starters, you got the Nain kid who is first-team all-conference player. So, I always start with experience. I look at experience and I look at depth. And TCU, there's only one team in the Big 12 that has more experience and more depth than TCU. And so I've got the Horned Frogs number two with those 4 returning starters. And then number one, I think we're both going to have the same number one. I've got Iowa State, only team in the Big 12 with all 5 returning starters. You look what they were able to do as far as protecting Brock Purdy. You look what they did, how they got physical with the running game. This is a team that they weren't the best offensive line in the Big 12 last year, but they were a long way from being in the bottom half of the Big 12. I would put them top probably 3 in the Big 12 last season, maybe Oklahoma, Texas, and then Iowa State comes into play there. This is a group that's going to be dangerous this year, and they're physical, they're nasty, they're everything you want as an offensive line coach. They've got to stay healthy because there's not a lot of depth behind these guys. But anytime you're returning 5 starters from a team that really achieved a lot of success the year before, that's a good thing. Iowa State top offensive line going into the season for me this year.
Yeah, I've got Iowa State at that number one position as well. A total combined 114 career starts amongst the 5 that we expect to step onto the field. It's the first time I've read since 2014 that Iowa State has returned all 5 starters along the offensive line. But you've also got to look at the recruits that they've brought in and the talent pool that they have sitting there on the roster. Ramos, a guy who came in as a top 50 position player out of high school at tackle. I'm looking not only what do they have at the starting position, but what's going to back them up? Because if this group can stay healthy, they will undoubtedly be that number one offensive line in the conference by the time conference play comes to a close. But it's what's going to be behind them that's really going to carry them, because we know there is going to be a rotation. We know that injuries are inevitable and ailments are inevitable. So again, I look at the talent that they have behind them, which continuously boosts them up to that number one for me. It's not just the starting 5, Matt. I'm looking at what's on that 2 deep.
All right. Close it out real fast. Just get your thoughts. NBA Finals. Golden State with the win pulls it to the series within 3-2. Game 6 in Oakland. What do you see happening here?
Man, I was number one shocked in game 5. I haven't got to watch a single game because of my schedule at this point in time. But I do get the recaps. I have people who want to talk consistently about the NBA Finals and ask opinions, whether I've seen it or I haven't. So the way that game 5 went down, like I said, just a little bit shocked that Toronto couldn't pull out that win in front of a home crowd. I said if they lost that game, the potential of Golden State winning the entire series went up exponentially. I still believe that to be true, but at the same time, neither team has really been able to defend their home court. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's like breaking all of the norms in this series. I really want Toronto to win it. I don't know that the KD injury is going to be a distraction for a team the caliber of Golden State. Golden State has a track record there. They've got experience on their side. I think if any team can pull it off, Matt, it's going to be them. So instead of me continuously rambling about this reason, I really want Toronto to win it. I just don't know that it's possible after game five.
I agree. I think the Warriors win game six in Oakland, send it back to Toronto for a game seven, which I think this makes, to me, it makes this the most exciting series that we've seen in the NBA Finals since LeBron beat the Warriors. Was that 4 years ago, 3 years ago, however long ago that was? But I think Golden State gets momentum late here, takes the series, and then Kawhi moves to Los Angeles. That's my take on this thing. And we can talk more about that later. Hey, thanks for tuning in. You can catch us on Twitter at Sports Heartland on Twitter. Follow us online at heartland-sports.com. Lots of content going up. He's Rich. I'm Matt. This has been the Sooner Nation podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. Boomer Sooner, everybody. We'll be right back.